Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for a very busy week in our Capitol, but first, wish I was there. Governor Tony Evers' call for a Thursday special session on gun safety bills played out as expected. Assembly and Senate Republican leaders took no action on it. But it's an important issue, so Wish I Was There is going to lead with a Capitol sights and sounds on that issue. Also, state Republican and Democratic chairs talk about why their presidential candidates are going to win Wisconsin on November 3. Rep. John Nygren questions the push to raise the age to buy cigarettes, vaping products to 21, and Representative Jeremy Thiesfeld defends his bill to require the teaching of children to write cursive. Wish I Was There.
How are you feeling about the special session?
Positive.
How do you feel that they're going to adjourn it as soon as it starts?
Well, if that's the case, then I'm assuming all Republicans are against it. And then they go home and have to run for re-election when they've essentially defied 80% of the people of Wisconsin.
They keep citing this 80% number, right, that's the reason he's doing it. Well, there's a new poll out today that shows 65% of people do not support Medicare for All. Right, and I think it's 60%+ support detaining people who are here illegally at the border. But I don't expect all of them to just flip what they believe in simply because a poll disagrees with what they personally ran on. But as he said in his statement to you, it's all about polls and politics, not about policy and progress.
Someone is killed by a gun every 15 hours in Wisconsin. Young people aged 15 to 24 are 23 times more likely to be killed with guns than can be compared to students from other countries. If these students can't vote politicians who don't make comprehensive gun violence legislation out yet, they will shortly.
November 7th, having arrived, the Assembly is in special session. Gentlemen from the 5th.
Mr. Speaker, I move the Assembly stand adjourned pursuant to SJR 1.
It's a non-debatable motion. All in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The Assembly is adjourned pursuant to SJR 1.
What we're going to do is contrast what the Democrats are talking about, the 2020 Democrats, and what they're talking about with the president's record of accomplishment. I really think this election is going to come down a lot to how much government do you want in your lives? How much government involvement do you want? I would characterize it as how much government intrusion do you want in your lives?
You know, I hope that the Republicans do run on Trump's record, because Trump has broken a string of promises that people remember very vividly. They decided to give him a try because they wanted change. Unfortunately, it's been change in the wrong direction. And I think we're well placed to be able to fight it out for every voter.
When you're able to make other decisions at 18, and yet you're going to set a standard at 21 and say that they can't make a decision until they're 21 on tobacco products, that's difficult. Should we be talking about taking away the right to vote till 21 because the brain isn't developed?
Many students with learning disabilities, specifically dyslexia, struggle with writing in print. Studies have shown that cursive comes more naturally to these students as they are able to write in a flow way with the mind-body connection and with a different part of the brain.
On the whole, AB 370 will significantly hamstring the ability for the Board of Regents, the UW system, chancellors to manage the institutions. It will make it extremely difficult to engage with our affiliated organizations, and it does not address the concerns about liability that have been expressed to me by legislators.
There was a lot of drama in the Capitol on that special session on guns, but no real action. No real surprises, JR, but what are your impressions about where this leaves the issue? Is it dead until next year's elections?
The conversation hasn't changed since we talked about this last. Republicans are convinced that this issue, while it is popular overall, is not a driver in their districts when it comes to things like taxes, health care, the economy. They believe that their seats are not really impacted by this issue, other than if you really try to go after Second Amendment rights, you will hear from their base, and that would not be good. The governor, his challenge is to prove he can use a bully pulpit on this. I mean, the governor is right. He's got a lot of issues on his side. He has yet to prove, people tell me, that he can go out and do like rural Wisconsin and drive the message home and put pressure on somebody that lawmaker feels like, okay, I have to now change my position because this guy's bringing heat in my district.
Yeah, and the operative term is what you said. He has yet to prove that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Let's go to the main topic. You and I know that for decades, there's kind of been a tradition that governors can pick the leaders of their cabinet agencies. And if senators have a problem, they can either vote against that confirmation, which is rare, but it does happen. Or if they have a problem with cabinet secretaries, they take it up with the governor. Mm-hmm. Historic vote in the Senate this week that, in essence, all the journalists have said, it's true, fired. Secretary of Ag, mm-hmm. Brad Pfaff. Now, it plays out in so many ways. A week ago, Fitzgerald asked the governor to withdraw this. He doesn't have the votes. The governor mm-hmm. said, I'm not going to withdraw it. He's a good person. I believe in him. But I find intriguing a lot of things. Well, first of all, 19 Republicans, all 19, voted not to confirm him. Out of there, Mr. Brad. And 14 Democrats, of course, voted. But I'm most intrigued in February, Senator Mark Lyons, agriculture, revenues, and financial institutions, five of those Republicans had voted to confirm Pfaff. What had Mr. Pfaff done in the interim months to get fired?
Let's talk about what Brad did that was his fault. Let's talk about what he had no control over.
The July comment.
So the no control over basically stems from the lame duck session in December, the move by Republicans to give them new powers. One, with cabinet appointments, from now on, after that, if you are rejected by the Senate, you cannot serve for the remainder of that biennium, right? Mm-hmm. That the confirmations they had of other appointments that went to court. While it was in court, Governor Evers sought to rescind a bunch of appointees of Governor Walker. There was a fight over this. Fitzgerald referenced this, that there was a hangover effect from Scott Walker, from the fights with, I mean, everything got pushed back, right? So rather than confirmation being about promises from cabinet secretaries, it came about performance, okay? There was more fodder for Republicans to hold against Brad. So things that Brad probably didn't do correctly. The Speaker's Task Force on Suicide Prevention was working on the kind of a comprehensive approach to suicide prevention mm-hmm. and wanted information from DATCAP about these grants that are used to help farmers if they're having a mental health crisis, they can get a voucher to go get treatment, okay? DATCAP was slow to turn the information over to Joan Ballweg, the representative who chaired that task force.
Yes.
Strike one. Strike two. Those grants became a subject of a kind of a contentious hearing for joint finance in late summer, early fall. Joint finance did not release that money despite calls from Democrats because they were waiting for the task force to come back with its recommendation. They wanted to put that in a comprehensive, like, one big package.
Yes.
Brad took shots at Republicans over that. Scott Fitzgerald was not happy about those comments and fired back. There's strike
offensive
two.
Offensive and non-productive is what he said.
There's strike two. Strike three. DATCAP has been pushing these rules that would change regulations for siting of livestock facilities, okay?
It's an update. The first rules were 14 years old.
And the process to update began under Governor Walker.
Yes.
But if you are a local government and you permit these facilities for the expansion or creation of a livestock facility, you'd have to follow these recommendations from DATCAP for your permits. The ag industry pushed back quite hard about these, saying, look, this is a terrible time to do this. We're struggling right now. You're going to put people out of business. Don't do this. DATCAP pulled back those rules on Friday.
4 days before the vote.
And right on the same time that Fitzgerald and Governor Evers had their phone call. Strike three. Now, there are other things at play here, okay? Let's be honest. Conservatives have not been very happy with Governor Evers about things like the confirmation process or rescinding those appointments. There's been a way, they're looking for ways to send messages to the governor about not being happy with rules in general they're pushing. These citing rules, this became a way to strike back at the governor. There also were complaints from Republicans that they questioned how effective Pfaff would be as the secretary. They raised concerns about that. I mean, there are all these other layers of the story, though, about politics and internal Senate Republican kind of process.
Okay, but there's a backdrop here that our farmers have been getting hammered for years mm-hmm. under the administrations of both Walker and Obama and Trump, etc. And those are some international forces. Mm-hmm. The low milk prices, that Canada not taking some of our milk products. But one other question. The five senators who voted in February to confirm him, Senators Mark Lyne, Teston, Jacques, Petrowski, and Bernier, only Teston is up. Mm-hmm. In next year. You see any damage to their careers by this vote?
We'll see. Of those five, the one who commented about the vote at all was Mark Lyne.
Yeah, he issued that statement.
Who said that Pfaff had politicized the agency in his words. Now, there's an interesting kind of like this in the weeds kind of observation, but Scott Fitzgerald, the majority leader, told us the other day that even though a lot of these cabinet picks got unanimous votes in committee, that those votes weren't about support. They were just about getting those confirmation votes to the Senate org.
Moving to the floor.
So the caucus could figure out what they want to do. I have never heard that before in my time covering the Capitol, that a confirmation vote in committee is not really that a vote of confidence.
Right.
But Mark Klein, actually during the debate on Tuesday, Senator Smith tried to read a statement from Petrosky from the hearing, saying nice things about Brad, and there was this whole like debate about that. I mean, this is also
that was ruled out of order by Senate President Roth,
and somehow Smith still got to read it anyway. Anyway,
interesting.
But this is a symbol of the broken relationship between the executive and legislative branches. It doesn't exist. I mean, I think broke is almost like too nice a word. It doesn't exist right now.
Right, we're about to hear from a couple clips from that debate, but I want to make one more point. These are the same Senate Republicans who in January of 2018 refused to confirm Elections Administrator Mike Haas, Ethics Administrator Brian Bell. So there is some precedent for, although those had been appointed by the commissions, remember, in the wake of, okay, all that.
Remember, too, there are still questions about Cerimini. Fitzgerald was blunt about those.
We're going to get there. We're going to get there.
Yeah.
After we hear some segments from the debate, the two leaders of the Senate talk about the confirmation, which was turned down, of Ag Secretary Brad Pfaff. Please.
Brad is a good man. He is undeniably qualified for this job. And at a time when the ag industry is in a crisis and there is uncertainty, Brad is that voice that we need to help family farmers in this state.
When it came to Brad Pfaff, I told the governor, I said, I don't think there's enough support there for him, and it's because of a number of missteps that have happened actually going back to February. And whether it's comments related to DATCAP, ATCP 51, comments about Republicans and farmer suicide, there's a whole slew of things, I think, that anybody could bring forth, but you got to be comfortable. And I think as we stand here today, there's a number of members of the majority that just aren't comfortable with Brad Pfaff.
After the Senate vote rejecting Brad Pfaff, the governor named interim, and that's important, Randy Romanski, who had been the deputy secretary at DATCAP. Mm-hmm. Now, you and I have interacted with Romanski for a long time. He's been a lifer, legislative aide, worked for then Attorney General Jim Doyle, then Governor Jim Doyle. Then when Governor Scott Walker was elected, he worked at the State Department of Transportation, mm-hmm. State Patrol Division. But the significance of interim is what?
He does not go through the confirmation process, so there's not a shot Republicans reject him. I mean, you know, and some Republicans told me that the problem with Brad was, yeah, he's a partisan appointee, I guess you'd say, but they didn't feel like they could work with him. Republicans actually raised the prospect on the floor on Tuesday of Romanski being elevated to the secretary spot and Brad becoming the deputy. Now, Governor Evers told us yesterday after a DATCAP board meeting he was not going to have Brad end up at DATCAP. But Romanski is somebody who is going to be seen as workable. You know, they can work with him. Republicans can. So I don't think he's somebody who's going to cause a lot of controversy. Also, it's interim. The question is, who's going to replace him and be a full-time cabinet secretary? And, oh, by the way, if you're a Republican who rejected Brad because of the siting rules or because of whatever, what are you going to get instead? Now, remember, Tony Evers is a Democrat. He's not going to appoint a conservative to be the DATCAP secretary. So you got to watch and see what the qualifications or the background of the person is who replaces him. If it's somebody who does not have Brad's background in farming, has a background in what? That's something to watch.
Okay. I got an email from somebody who asked two pretty good questions. Number one, couldn't the governor reappoint Brad in some other job in state government?
Yes.
Yeah, the answer is yes. We don't know if indeed he will do that. And this emailer said, couldn't he reappoint Brad back in some position in DATCAP, which would be awkward because then he would be in a supportive role to a secretary, in essence, a job that he had, right?
And like I said, Evers said yesterday, we asked him about that, he said that Brad will not end up at DATCAP in a capacity going forward. So, but I'm watching for the landing spot for
yes.
Brad somewhere else in state government, see if that announcement comes by next week's show.
And one other question from this emailer, Why is it that there's no records before 1987 of cabinet secretaries who were not confirmed by the Senate? My answer, going back to what I said earlier, there's a long tradition of the governors getting to pick who they want to run the state agencies. So I have no problem with the idea that there's no records prior to 1987.
That's as far back as Reference Bureau could go for us when we asked. So
yeah. Okay. New topic. As you alluded earlier, what does the FAF vote rejecting him mean for the other unconfirmed secretaries? But it looks to me like four cabinet secretaries are most at risk. That's a dangerous term, but let's use it. Tourism Secretary Meany, Transportation Secretary Thompson, Health Services Secretary Palm, Safety and Professional Services Krim. Meany is involved in an open records dispute and allegedly asked a member of the Tourism Council to resign. Craig Thompson liked a gas tax, which many Senate conservative Republicans don't. Palm appointed a key deputy from Planned Parenthood, and this tragic incident where Krim got angry with her child. Mm-hmm. So how effective can these designees who haven't been confirmed, do they have to look over their shoulder thinking, am I going to take actions or say something that'll get me fired by the state Senate?
Sure, because we had talked before that the perception had been for a long time that people who had problems like these four plus Brad would just sit. So now with Brad, there were things that happened that put a snowball in motion that couldn't be stopped, essentially. For the other four, is there a snowball starting to roll? Krim hasn't even made out a committee yet. That committee is chaired by Chris Kapinga, Republican from Delafield. From what I understand,
who told you he doesn't even know if he's going to hold a confirmation vote.
So what I understand, there are some concerns there from members of that committee about her confirmation. If she can't get out of committee, maybe never gets to the floor.
Right.
Thompson, you know, unless a bunch of Republicans who have said very nice things about him all of a sudden turn tail, he's just going to sit. He's going to be fine because there are not 17 no votes the last time I checked. With Andrea Palm, the whole issue is that some anti-abortion groups are very unhappy that the Evers administration hired a former Planned Parenthood official to be the number three person at DHS. If you fire Andrea Palm, you don't get rid of the person from Planned Parenthood at DHS. So, again, unless Republicans who said in committee, I don't have an issue with this, change their minds, she should be fine. Sarah is the one that Scott Fitzgerald is most kind of like bringing up. Now the question is, does anything else come out? Well, does a snowball kind of build?
Senator Jock is on the Tourism Council. Mm-hmm. He's got problems with the way she has run that agency. So yep. This has just surfaced fairly recently.
Does it get to 17 no votes? Also, don't forget, we're here just shy of mid-November. They're not coming back until January. So there is time for this stuff to kind of calm down.
Right. Senate is done for the year. Excuse me.
It's time for this stuff to calm down. But again, does another story pop? Are there more concerns? Oh, by the way, if Andre Jacques is a critic, if he sees anything that he can feed to people or other critics, there could be more stories. That's what Sarah has to worry about and has to watch going forward. And don't forget, Republicans really wanted Governor Evers to keep Stephanie Klett in that role. So if you're a pro-Klett person and weren't happy that Evers didn't keep her, which is no surprise, by the way. I mean, I don't remember many partisan turnovers where they keep a secretary. But if you're a pro-Klett person and still have some kind of information, you might be looking for ways to kind of stir the pot.
Well, it's interesting. The governor said this is very intimidating. His quote, to think that the unconfirmed secretaries have to keep their mouth shut for 4 years in order to get approved by the Senate, that's BS. Senator Fitzgerald candidly said, I don't know if the rest of them are going to make it. So we won't know until the Senate reconvenes next year and whether they're going to take action.
Yeah, and they'll be done probably not long after that from what I keep hearing. So it's going to be a narrow window to make a decision before going home.
As the Senate under Fitzgerald plays goalie
yes,
that term. Okay, let's turn to the Senate vote that would change the Constitution, a new limit on vetoes. This is the one that would say no governor, D or R, could veto in a way that would add spending beyond what was approved by the Assembly and Senate. Two quotes on that. Senator Kathy Bernier, to be able to create new dollars, I don't believe that is the intent of the Constitution. She voted for the change. Senate Democratic Leader Schilling, this is today's power grab by the majority to clip the authority and the power of the Democratic governor. 1914 partisan vote, Senate to the Assembly. Why is it there? Governor Evers vetoed the 2019-21 budget in a way to add $65 million in K-12 spending. The Assembly is in session next Tuesday. Are they likely to take this or take their time?
It's not on the agenda, if I remember
Thank
right.
Thank you. You're right.
But they have plenty of time to pass this. They just have to get it done before they go home sometime late winter, early spring for the session. Amendment has to pass back-to-back legislative sessions, both yeah. houses, if it goes to a statewide referendum. They could pass, the assembly could pass anytime January, February, go home, come back after January 2021,
right.
knock it out, have the ballot that spring. What to watch, the thing we talked about before, my only question had been, would moderates in the state Senate, Republican caucus, go along with it? This is a big push from conservatives. The fact that 1914 suggests, yes, they're willing to go along with it.
Yes.
The issue that Senator Fred Risser raised, longtime lawmaker, longest serving state lawmaker in the nation's history.
In the nation's history.
Madison Democrats said, okay, what happens if vindictive lawmakers down the road cut the salaries of Supreme Court justices, saying, we don't like your decisions, we're cutting your salaries in half. And the governor partially vetoes that piece of the budget and says, no, it's not going to work. How's that work?
Yeah.
What about if they cut the salaries of state employees? I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know the answer to these questions, but is it set a hard cap? So the budget, let's say this passes, budget comes out, and lawmakers set a hard cap of, let's say, $85 billion. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that's the cap the governor can't exceed? He can mess around anything under that?
Under that.
I don't know. Like, that's the real question, and this is all because Evers found a way around the restriction on the veto authority. It says you can't write up a number, we call it. You know, replace 100, make it 150. But he found a way to stitch together some other numbers to increase the per pupil spending,
right.
which is some sufficient, which means whatever the number is, you got to meet it. He found a way around that restriction on his veto authority.
Yes, and this constitutional change in the Senate, was the lead sponsor was Senator David Craig. So in this segment, let's listen to the video clip. Senator Craig, and then he's answered by Senator Erpenbach. Please.
These are not Republican and Democrat or conservative and liberal issues. These are basic civics issues. You're afraid of the people of Wisconsin acting in their legislature assembled and then acting directly. The opportunity that the people of Wisconsin have under our founders' vision of how government should act in amending its most fundamental document, the state constitution. Our constitutional amendment is a moderate step to rein in what individuals in this body have already stated is the most powerful governorship in the state in the United States with the veto authority that they exercise.
Those who put the Constitution together, obviously it's important that we have co-equal branches of government, and the idea that if a governor does something that the legislature, the majority party in the legislature doesn't like, they can schedule a veto override vote whenever they choose to do so. This is something completely different. This tears down and wrecks our system of government. We have something called a veto override. Yeah, you probably don't have the votes, but that's not the point. The point is we already have something to counteract what a governor does. And since you know we don't have the votes, let's just go and change the Constitution. There's no Democrat supporting this. And if it were a Republican governor, I wouldn't support this.
Governor Evers vetoed the parts mm-hmm. of the legislature's budget in July. Now, 4 months later, yesterday, the state assembly tries to override him on three mental health-related bills, and we're going to summarize those with a graphic. All three of them failed on 62-34 votes. Why come back 4 months later? Is this just trying to put Democrats on record
sure.
on this issue? That's
sure.
what this is about, right?
Oh, it's about, in a giant budget, it's hard to pick out individual pieces sometimes. This is a clear vote about whether you support, for example, this stuff in western Wisconsin especially. If you're a lawmaker in western Wisconsin, hello, Patty Schottner, top Republican target for 2020. If you're not going to override the governor's veto, then they're going to say, hey, you're not caring about this issue in your backyard. Now, there's been work on that same issue separate from the budget, but there's a clear vote you can use against somebody next fall.
Well, predictable vote, 62-34. Mm-hmm. Although they came within, I mean, if they could have flipped four Democrats, they would have overridden. Of course, the Senate probably is not going to override.
Mm-hmm.
But are we likely to see this again, given the new rule that
sure.
you can have unlimited
these
numbers?
Issues, these issues, I don't know. But like, we see more overrides, possibly. But the issue is Robin Voss wants a veto-proof majority in the Assembly.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
To get there, he needs 66 votes. How do you get there? There are not many, if any, Democrats in even swingy states anymore. Seats anymore. They're all in like solid Dem seats, other than Robin Vining in Wauwatosa, swing seat. Doyle out in western Wisconsin, actually Republican-leaning seat, but that guy survives everything. So that gets you two. where do you find the other ones? I mean, you're talking about beating somebody in suburban Milwaukee or in like in Eau Claire or northern Wisconsin. How do you find those? It's tough to do. But Robin's going to try and build a case,
yeah,
and he's going to have the money to do it.
He is. Okay, let's go to your stock reports. Rising.
So drunk driving bills, we've talked about this for a long time. Will they get anything done on drunk driving? Bill clears. Actually, two bills cleared the Senate this week. One goes to the governor's desk.
Right.
They're both about mandatory minimum sentences, one for fifth or sixth OWI, one for homicide by OWI, raises the mandatory minimums. The governor has not said for sure where he's at on these bills, but they passed overwhelmingly. Cost has always been an issue.
Yes.
We're just waiting for the governor to say what he wants to do. Don't forget the governor said he wants to also lower our prison population. If you're raising the mandatory minimums, you're going to add prisoners in the process. So how's that going to work?
Okay. And mixed.
So David Crowley, first state lawmaker to announce from Milwaukee County Executive.
Leader of the legislature's Hispanic and Black Caucus.
Elected 2016. Crowley says he sees opportunities and challenges in Milwaukee County. He's going to run for county exec. There's an interesting.
Chris Abele is not going to seek another term.
Interesting field developing so far. So Crowley is in. Brian Kennedy, who used to work with one of the AFT, I believe, Greenfield mayor, he's running. We're waiting to hear about Chris Larson, state lawmaker from Milwaukee, ran before. County board chair Theo Lipscomb. Jim Sullivan, former state lawmaker, went and worked with the Abele administration. Oh, Daniel Reamer, got to wait to see what he does, another state lawmaker. Here's the big thing about this race. There's a primary within the primary. It's the Chris Abele primary. Chris Abele has got a very, very big checkbook. And who might Chris Abele back in this process? Jim Sullivan, who served one term of state Senate,
yes,
before lost the 2010 Republican wave. He worked in the Abele administration, Abele's big backer of his. If Sullivan gets in, maybe Abele backs him. If Sullivan doesn't get in, maybe he backs David Crowley. You know, that would be Crowley's young African-American. He's got a lane in this race from that. We're also watching Chris Larson, what he does. Remember, Chris Larson lost Abele, like with 44 or 46% of the vote in 2016. So, but Larson may have the Bernie Sanders effect in this race. What I mean by that was in 2016, Sanders was the alternative to Hillary Clinton, right? So you got all these votes because he was not Hillary Clinton. Now look at the polls of a more diverse primary for president with more choice for Democrats. He's not at 46%. He's at 18, you know, depending on which poll you look at. With Larson, you can't assume all the anti-Abele votes are just going to stay with him because now they have more choices. So what's Larson going to do? I know, by the way, Larson and like Lips, I mean, Milwaukee politics are like a whole other layer of you know, intrigue to me.
It really is. Okay, and we're talking here about electing a Milwaukee County executive in April with the primary in February. Do we have that right?
Yep. Don't forget, we're going to have a new Milwaukee County executive. We've got a Milwaukee mayor's race.
Yeah.
It's interesting to watch, too. Crowley's running for county executive. Lena Taylor's running for mayor. Jason Fields is running for comptroller. You know, typically, Milwaukee does not have a high turnout for the African-American population, right, in spring elections. It's just the way it's been. But it's almost like an African-American slate. I'm not saying they agree on much, if anything, sometimes. But if you have a Kamala Harris or Cory Booker still on the presidential primary ballot, might you see a surge in African-American turnout saying, hey, this race, and I have a reason to turn out this time.
Okay.
That could help a Crowley, for example, in a race like that.
Okay, you got 50 seconds on your phone.
So, Governor Evers puts his package of homeless bills in his budget as a goodwill sign to Republicans.
Homeless
bills. They pull them out, so I know we're going to do it separately. And now they're not going to get done.
Well, but the champion in the assembly on that is the majority leader, Steinicke. Mm-hmm. He's put out three or four press releases.
The problem is that Scott Fitzgerald said that these bills have a price tag that people are uncomfortable with in his caucus. It's $3.75 million a year. So he's $7.5 million for the biennium, and he's saying it's a lot of spending. That's code word for there's a problem in my caucus, it ain't going to get done. It's just kind of a real roadblock for these. I mean, miracles happen, but Republicans, those who back these bills admit, you know, maybe if we kept in the budget, it would have helped us. Although the problem could have popped up with joint finance then during the budget process rather than as separate bills.
Okay, but the policy forum just reported that with a rainy day fund and our surplus, we're to the good of about $1.7 billion. This is...
Don't forget, Republicans,
a sliver of that.
Conservatives in the Senate, especially Republican caucus, were not happy with the overall spending in the budget, period. This is another chunk that they would be like, hey, this is too much.
Okay, we're almost out of time. I just want to point out that the Assembly passed a package dealing with suicide prevention that had been recommended by a task force. We don't have time to address that today, but my interview with the co-chairs of that task force, Representatives Baldwig and Steve Doyle, was recorded on October 9th. The bills that they discussed then are now in the State Assembly. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for November 8.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.